When I Grow Up podcast with me, Katie Filo. Each week I interview a guest about the trials, tribulations and joys of growing up. My guest this week is personal trainer and fitness blogger Zanna van Dijk. Her website bio states that she finds it hard to define her job, but why define it when you have your finger in so many impressive pies? These pies include, but are not limited to, being a trainer, Adidas Global Ambassador, BBC podcast host, author, blogger, vlogger and co-founder of The Girl Gains. A 2014 graduate of the University of Sheffield, Zanna studied speech sciences. It wasn't until her second year, when she discovered her passion for fitness, that her idea of the future started to change. After graduating, she set off around the world backpacking, and it was on this journey of self-discovery that confirmed Zanna's commitment to a career in fitness. Upon returning to the UK, she moved to London to complete a six-week personal training course, and hasn't looked back since. Over the past few years, Zanna has juggled personal training alongside a whole host of projects to become a famous face in the fitness world, and has even published her first book called Strong. Beyond smoothies and squats, Zanna is passionate about sustainability. An explorer and ocean lover, Zanna recently launched a sustainable swimwear brand called Stay Wild and wants to make caring about the environment cool. When offering advice on starting a business, Zanna says, find your passion, embrace the challenge, and you'll work harder than you ever thought you could. And work hard is precisely what Zanna has done to get so far, age 25. Also, just a little quick warning that I had a few audio issues when recording this interview, but hopefully they don't detract from the brilliance that is Zanna van Dijk and all the incredible pearls of wisdom she had to share. Welcome, Zanna van Dijk, to the When I Grow Up podcast.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. I'm delighted to have you here today in your very plush hotel room.
In New York. Woo!
So yeah, I want to begin with the question I ask all guests, which is, tell me a bit about a younger Zanna. What did she want to be when she grew up?
When I was younger, I wanted to be an athlete when I grew up. I wanted to be a sprinter. I really admired Marion Jones. Remember Marion Jones?
No.
She was like a 100-meter sprinter from America, and I just wanted to be like her. Also wanted to be a ballerina for a while. Wanted to be a marine biologist, zoologist. All of the above.
All the careers.
Yeah, I wanted my finger in every pie. I feel I do the same now, but in a different way.
Why commit when you can have it all?
Exactly.
And what did growing up mean to you as you got older? Is there a moment when you feel like you've grown up?
Oh my God, no. And I talk to my dad about this now because my dad is like 67, sorry dad if I've got that wrong, 67, 68 maybe, maybe 65, sorry dad, and he always says that he feels like he's 21 on the inside, and I feel like maybe mentally you never change, but physically your body grows up, so I guess there isn't a single thing which defines growing up, it's just having life experience, time passing, you know?
I agree, completely. There's never one moment where you're like, right, I'm 21 and that's it. Like,
no.
I can do everything now.
No, I feel like I'm definitely struggling at adulting still when I'm 25, so.
It's very reassuring to hear this. Because on the outside, you know, you pretty much are doing it all, so.
No. Blagging my way through life.
aren't we all? So I wanted to talk to you a bit about, you wrote a really powerful piece on your blog about bullying and how it shaped you growing up. I think it's really tempting sometimes to just glorify school and it being like this defining thing, but I love it when people talk really honestly about it and just say, like, it really wasn't that great.
Oh my God.
Tell me about that experience and how it shaped you.
People are always like, oh my God, school years are the best years of my life. I loved school. I'm like, God, am I allowed to swear?
Yes,
I had a shite time at school. It was like the worst time of my life. No, I was really badly bullied from probably like age 11 to 15, 16. Things got better in sick form, I think, because I grew, I had blonde hair. People start to realise I'm a woman, not just this person to be insulted. but like up until then, it wasn't very good. It wasn't like physical bullying. It was just like girls like manipulating and leaving you out constantly. Like, you know, if you went on a school trip and they'd be like pairing up for rooms and I'd always be the one who's like left at the end and everybody's like, who's gonna go with Zanna? Do you know what I mean? Like all that sort of stuff. And I'm like, it was just so shocking for your confidence. But I feel like I use that as energy to study. Like, because everybody else in sick form was like partying. I wasn't really doing that. So I was just studying. I ended up doing quite well with my academics. So I feel like don't look back on that time feeling sad. I feel like it was just part of my experience and it made me believe that like I now could never be mean to somebody. Like I could never bully somebody or like purposefully make somebody feel bad because I had that happen to me so much that I'm like, I just want to make everybody else happy. So I think it shaped me in a good way.
Yeah, no, I feel very similarly. Like, I think I used academia as my kind of escape sometimes. So, yeah. And it's really nice that you recognise that even though it was not a very nice experience,
yeah,
like, it's not, you're not a victim, like, it hasn't defined you in that way.
No, which is, not at all. Yeah, not at all. Great. I think you can take positives from it, for sure.
And you also said that one of your favourite quotes is, the one who falls and gets back up is much stronger than the one who never fell.
Yeah.
Is that, like, kind of, I guess it's really related to that idea, isn't it? Is that what kind of propels you?
Yeah, exactly. I feel like I'm a better person because I fell, and it, like, it builds you up to be a stronger human. Somebody who goes through something tough is a stronger human than somebody who lives a life surrounded by bubble wrap. Do you know what I mean? You kind of have to have some struggles in order to strengthen. So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and be relatable and be able to relate to people as well.
Yeah. So, I just think it makes you a nicer human.
Do you ever have these figures from your past get in touch with you now, or do you not even worry about
that? Not really from school, no. Like, I think people just realised... I think when I first started getting into this industry, a few people, like, slid into my Facebook messages and were like, hey, Zanna, would love to catch up. Do you think you could, like, help promote my company? And I'm like, no. No, I just don't even bother them with a reply. But yeah, I actually have blocked a lot of people, so I just don't want them to see what I'm doing.
Like, I think it's always some people that are constantly dwelling in the past, like, and glorifying their school days again and failing to, like, live in the present as well. Now I want to talk about a bit about university and those big decisions that come around the age of 18, which really is quite ludicrously young, isn't it, to be making these, like, decisions that may be going to shape your life. So you studied speech science at the University of Sheffield.
Yeah.
What made you make that decision?
I don't really know. Well, I do know and I don't know. I wanted to be somebody who helped people. And when I went to my careers advisor and I said, I want to help people, they're like, cool, so... what do you want to be? I'm like, well, I want to help people. And I put forward, like, I want to do psychology. And they said, you'd have to do a master's degree to specify to be actually be able to help people. Maybe you could look into different sorts of therapist. So I looked into, like, counselling, didn't have enough life experience. Art therapy, didn't really like art. Speech therapy, oh, that's like a combination where you're giving people therapy, but it's based on science. And I have a very scientific brain. So I was like, cool. It means I get to study science and I get to help people. Sounds good to me. Plus, bonus, it's NHS funded course, so you don't have to pay tuition fees because there's a shortage of speech therapists. Yeah. So I was like, this just, all the signs are pointing in the same direction. I should do speech therapy. So yeah, that's pretty much why I did it. It just made sense in terms of my academic strengths, but also my willingness to try and help people in some way.
I love how it's just like a tick box criteria thing where you're like, well, it kind of basically...
It makes sense. Yeah, exactly. It makes sense. I'll give it a go. I'll study that for 4 years.
When you made that decision, were you like, well, that's probably my life now? Or were you quite... like, you understood that it might change?
No, I was like, I'm going to be a speech therapist. Like, that's just what you did, you know? You leave school, you go to uni, and then you do what you studied.
Yeah.
That's just what I thought you did.
And especially when yours is kind of an occupational degree.
Oh,
where
yeah.
It's leading you
and
into
like,
a career.
You do placements at the end, and you're expected to stay on that placement and do that job.
Did you feel pressured to stay in it?
Kind of. But it was a very slow process of changing my mindset, which kind of meant that by the end of the degree, I was like, nah.
You were like very confident. And
yeah.
Did you look around at all your fellow students and ever kind of think, oh, I wish I could just be like you and want to do this, but I don't?
Kind of. Because it was a 4-year degree, and I remember on the second year, I started to get into fitness. And I was like, oh, this is really fun. And I was like, oh, do I want to do this as a hobby, or do I want to be a speech therapist? And then it got into my third year, and it was the hardest year of the degree. And by this point, I was thinking, I don't really want to be a speech therapist. But I am working so hard, and I'm studying so hard, and I'm like, bloody hell, I wish I wanted to do this because it'd be so much more enjoyable. And I felt like I was slogging through 4 years of studying, kind of knowing at this point in the back of my head that I didn't want to be a speech therapist anymore. So it was kind of, I remember thinking when I was studying, thinking, damn, I just wish I loved this subject as much as I did when I first started. But now my head is elsewhere and I'm planning other things I want to do when I leave. So yeah, that's a bit of a mindfuck. Sorry, I do swear a lot.
It's okay. It's okay. But in the same way that bullying kind of like shaped and like shaped a lot of who you are today, I guess those 4 years, like, it gave you commitment, determination, and I'm sure there's many things that you learned through your studies and through your placements that you apply now as well.
Oh my God, yeah. And I think having the ability to realise I didn't want to be a speech therapist and still study it for another 2 years, 2.5 years, taught me a lot. Like, I can set my mind to something and do it, even if I don't want to do it. And it's an awful lot of work. It's a Bachelor of Medical Science. It's like a really, really, really intense course. And I still did it because I wanted to study it. Well, I wanted to get the qualification. I wanted to finish and finish university. I felt like I was too far deep. But yeah, I think it definitely taught me skills. Like also now academic writing. A lot of people who work in fitness have never had experience analysing scientific papers, whereas I feel very comfortable analysing scientific papers and reading them. So it's definitely given me a lot of skills I can
use. It's like that famous commencement speech that Steve Jobs did, where he talks about how it might not make sense at the time, but when you look back, you can really clearly connect the dots. And it feels like you probably wouldn't be where you are now if you hadn't done or gone through the decision-making process.
Oh, my goodness. No, I don't think I'd be who I am now or doing what I do now if I hadn't been to university. So I don't regret it for a minute.
So after graduating, you went travelling.
Yeah.
And you hadn't taken a gap year before, had you? So this was like your chance to just like let loose and explore the world and explore a bit about yourself as well. Can you kind of take me through like that learning process? What did it feel like when you were away?
Now, I hate to sound like a cheesy cheese ball, but I definitely feel like when you travel, like you just gain perspective. And I hate to say I found myself, but I definitely found what I wanted to spend my time on, because I felt like there's all these people in the world living their best lives, doing what they really want to do. And I'm here feeling like I should be doing speech therapy, or I should be following this normal series of events when it comes to your life and your career and like your timeline, which everybody else follows. And I just thought, you know what, I don't have to. I can do what I want to do. I'm 20, whatever age I was back then, 21, 20. Like, I can take a risk. It doesn't matter. So that was what traveling gave me, the perspective to realize, like, this is my one life, so I might as well do what I really want to do. And like, I'm young, this is my opportunity to take a risk, to change my career, to do what I want. And if it fails, then I can always come back to speech therapy. I have a good degree from a good university, like, that's a safe backup plan. But I think before traveling, I'd been too scared to like fully commit to the fact that I was going to change career. And then when I traveled, I was like, yeah, I'm going to change.
Just confirmation. I think being out of your normal surroundings.
Yeah, like out of the bubble.
Yeah. Was the pressure more from yourself, do you think, rather than anyone else around you to follow that set route that you had carved?
I'd say my parents were quite strongly opinionated about this matter at the time. Mm-hmm. They really, 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 really wanted me to do speech therapy or to be in something academic. And the idea of me not doing that gave them a bit of anxiety about the whole situation. And even the day that I graduated and I said that I'm not going to do this as a career, Mum was like, this is very disappointing. Like, I mean, when your parents say they're disappointed, it's absolutely heart-wrenching. So they told me, well, Mum said she was disappointed in me for not following on with speech therapy. My dad is an entrepreneur. He moved here from Holland, set up his own company. He's been through like success and failure with his own business. He's like, I'll support you whatever you do. Thanks, Dad. So he's great. And love Mum too. But like, Dad has supported me through every decision that I've made with my business. Whereas I think Mum has a traditional perspective of like what success is, and it's academic and it's studying, and it's working for the NHS, it's having a 9-to-5. And then I turn around and I'm like, I'm going to go move to London and see what happens. Mum's like, oh God. So
and now it's been a few years. Does she look at what you've achieved and she's just like, yeah.
Oh my God.
You made the right decision.
Mum is my biggest fan. Mum is my biggest fan. Like, she's a bigger fan than Dad. So yeah, it's crazy because I don't think she'd ever admit what she originally said. Like, if I told her now, do you remember when you told me you were disappointed in me? She'd be like, no, I never said that. But you did, Helen. but now she's like my biggest fan with everything. So
that's so lovely. It's funny because I think as their children, you always do want to make your parents proud.
Yeah.
Do what they expect, and you want this like stamp of approval.
Yeah.
And it is like, but it's amazing that you really were behind your decision, and you were prepared to just take responsibility if it didn't work out.
Yeah, but I did do a safety backup for them, just to settle my own mind.
That?
I applied for a master's degree at Oxford Brookes. I still have the offer, I've just deferred it 4 years. But I got an offer to study sports nutrition at Oxford Brookes, and I was like, Mum, if all else fails, look, I'll go and study again. Because I knew that I'd make her happy, and I was hoping in my mind that I'd never have to go. But I did it, I went for the interviews, I got the acceptance, and I had this place ready to go to university if all else failed, because I knew that I'd make my mum happy. I never wanted to go, but it was just like a safety net for her. Do you know
what
I mean?
And probably mentally just to know there was an option there just in case.
Yeah, but yeah, it's a nice safety blanket.
And so when you got to that moment when you kind of hit back down in the UK and you moved very quickly to London, this was in 2015.
It was back then,
so
I don't
years
know.
Ago.
Yeah.
And what was your aim, or like, what did you have a plan at that point?
So I got back in December just before Christmas, and I moved to London in February. Mm-hmm. And the master's degree was starting in September. So I was like, cool, I've got like 5-6 months to try and basically earn some money before I go to university again. But fingers crossed, when I'm down there, because I went down there to do a personal training course. Basically what happened, let me give you a bit of background. I was one of the only UK fitness bloggers at the time. I wasn't that big, but I had like 40,000 followers, which back then was like, whoa!
When Instagram really wasn't used in the way it is now.
And I got offered a free personal training course. Amazing. What an opportunity. And they said, come down to London, do the course, and like you can document it across your social media, blah, blah, blah. I was thinking, hell yeah, why not do that? So moved down to London, lived in an Airbnb with a man called Jonathan who was deaf. Luckily, I spoke sign language. So this was very interesting.
Yeah. See, I was the skills coming into play.
Yeah. So I was living with Jonathan, commuting God knows how long to do this personal training course every day. And that's what I did. I did it for 6 weeks, qualified. And I remember when I finished that course, I came up and saw my parents and I went, so I'm not moving back up north. Because basically I told them, I'm going to do the course and I'll come back up north. I'll move back in with you. But over the course of the personal training course, loads of cool things had happened. Like I'd actually done some work with a really big sports brand and signed to a modelling agency and all these things had gone on. And I thought,
in 6 weeks?
Yeah, like, because I was in London, I was like, I just want to do everything.
Yeah.
Considering I was studying crazy hours as well. But I was like, I'm going to make this work. And then anyway, by the time I finished the course, I was like, Mum, I've lined up a house in London. I'm going to move in next Monday. Do you want to help me move down to London this weekend? And she's like, what? So, yeah, like...
I mean, you're not going to do your master's.
Yeah, I literally was like, look, I'll come back up north for 2 days. Let's put everything in the car and drive down to London. I'm moving there. Let's see what happens. And she's like, cool. So, yeah, then I moved down. And then by the time it got around to master's degree time in September, everything was going really well. I was working full-time as a personal trainer in, like, a private studio. And I was earning enough money to just about get by in London. And I just thought, I'll give it another go. I'll just keep going and defer the master's degree. And now I've deferred it, like, 3 or 4 years in a row, so...
And I guess, like, if you could look at what happened in those 6 weeks, if that was just, like, your kind of pilot period...
Yeah.
Imagine what you could do in a year, 2 years. Like, it was enough to give you hope that...
Yeah,
this could really be your full-time
thing. And it just gave me like reassurance that there's opportunities in London and I should be there if I want to seize them, so just do it.
And did you feel that you'd really kind of found your thing and like your element?
Yeah, that my element has changed now. I mean, it's 4 or 5 years later, mm-hmm. 3 years, I don't know time, but it's a few years later and my thing has changed now, but I had found my thing at that point. I was so passionate about it and I just wanted to learn so much. And I do still love fitness. It's evolved quite a lot more now. We can talk about that. Mm-hmm. But back then it was like, wow, I'm in London in the fitness industry. I feel like I'm on the cusp of something huge because the fitness industry was just growing, hadn't quite exploded yet. And I was lucky because I was in London when the fitness scene exploded and like right place, right time. I managed to ride that wave a bit, but...
With talent as well, with some hard work,
a hell of a lot of hard work, but I was definitely right place, right time, and I could feel that the fitness industry was going to explode. So it
and
felt
it just
good
took
to be there.
That, like the courage, I think a lot of people, you know, they probably do have that yearning to do these things, but you've got to be bold, and if you have it, you've got to go for it. Exactly.
Yeah, and it's scary AF.
Yeah.
Scary AF. Yeah, but you just do it.
Did you feel that you were constantly living on the edge in that sense for that period?
I just felt like I didn't know where I was going or what I was doing. And as somebody who's very academic, very organised, very like has a plan for everything, I was like, this is so bizarre. This is so out of my comfort zone. I'm just kind of rolling with it and seeing what happens and like seizing every opportunity that I could. And it was just a really big learning curve. The whole last few years of my life has been a massive learning curve and I'm still on it. So
the academic system... You always have things to aim for, like exams to study for, you have structure and time frames, and then now you're learning to live maybe slightly against what feels natural to you.
Yeah, and like I'm still in this mindset where I have no idea where I'm going to be in 5 years, and that still messes with my head because I'm like, I don't know where I'm going to be.
But do you find it quite exciting at the same time?
It's very exciting because there's so many opportunities and you could go in whatever direction you want. But as somebody, again, who's very like goal-orientated... It's very bizarre to not really know where the industry is going to be because it's not all in my control, you know? Like, I can't control where the social media world's going to go or where the blogging industry is going to go. So I just kind of have to keep my finger on the pulse.
Up.
Yeah, like literally buckle up and go for it.
you've said before that you find it quite hard to define what you do.
Yeah.
And it really is a long list of things. I read it at the top of the show, like you're a trainer, Adidas Global Ambassador, a podcast host, a vlogger.
Yeah.
You've got a swimwear company called Stay Wild, and you've got Girl Games. And... I mean, it goes on and on.
Yeah.
How do you feel about having such a vast and expansive career and job?
It comforts me because there's a lot of bloggers who just blog, and that scares me. Because I'm like, then all your eggs are in this blog basket, right? And you can't control the blogging world. Whereas I like to have my eggs in a multitude of baskets so that if the blogging world collapses, I've got a swimwear brand, I've got an events company, I've got a book, I've got training guides, I've got like all these other things which I can fall back on. Like for me, having multiple income streams and multiple things which I work on gives me comfort because it feels like I've got a solid base here. I'm not relying on Instagram. If somebody just does Instagram for a career, that scares me. I'm like, because what if Instagram goes down tomorrow? What's your job? I can't, like, I need to have fingers in multiple pies to feel like I've got a bit of security because it's such an unpredictable industry and world.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And I guess it's just that if one of them folded, then you just start channeling that energy into another one.
Exactly.
And then that one might accelerate, and then there may another thing could pop up.
Yeah.
Down the road. But I guess that then leaves you really open to new projects, and it means you're not very closed-minded and you're constantly evolving and changing
exactly
as you go.
And it's just like seeing what comes up. Like I didn't speak about sustainability or plastic until about 6 months ago, and then I just set up a swimwear company based on that like a month ago, and like that I wasn't even on my radar like a year ago. Like you just have to go with it. Like that's the thing.
And do you feel like that is really the kind of central part of why you do what you do, is that you're always, it keeps you interested, like
in, oh my god, I'm never bored. I am never bored because I'm always doing something new. And I actually had a meeting with somebody yesterday and he said, Sana, like all these things that you do you like plan that you're going to do it, do you like research, do you prepare? And I'm like, no, I just think I want to do that, I'm going to make it happen. And like, for example, the swimwear company, I'm literally Googling, how do I do distribution for a startup swimwear brand, what sort of stitching should I use on the elastic of a blah 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 blah. Like everything I'm just learning as I go, but that's exciting to me. So yeah, it is a little bit crazy.
It's really reassuring that you can just Google these things and you're like you're making it up as you go along as well.
Yeah, the swimwear like takes a ridiculous amount of work. We have been working on it for like 6 months, but it just, you have to, you can't know these things. And every, like what we did when we first came up with the idea for the swimwear was we literally contacted every single person we knew who worked in fashion and called them and was like, how did you start? Every single person who starts a fashion brand doesn't know what they're doing. Every single person that I called was like, you don't really know, you just kind of learn.
Really?
Like nobody has a background in it, you just make it happen.
And it's the same with like when you look at anyone's career. It's not like I could just copy what you've done and have the same career as you.
No.
Like, there's no set route or path. And like you said, things are changing so much that you just have to feel your way. And as long as you believe in it and you're committed
hard,
and you work
hard.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I always think. As long as I'm working hard, then I know that the outcome's going to come back to me. Do you know what I mean? So,
You opened up actually on your blog about what the effect of spinning all these plates was and how it can be very taxing. And when you look back 2 years ago, you realise you were just working all hours and the balance just quite wasn't there at all.
No.
But you've said also that if you hadn't done that, you wouldn't probably be where you are today.
No.
How's that transition happened to work, like, and how do you balance it now?
Yeah, I think people get scared to say that. Mm. People get scared to say that sometimes it's okay to lose your balance. Because I think everybody has got this aspiration for work-life balance and like you've got to make sure that you prioritize yourself, and like I think that's great. But realistically, if you're setting up a new business and you're spinning all these plates, sometimes you're going to lose balance, and sometimes like that's fine. I don't think that I would be where I am or doing what I'm doing unless there'd been a point in my life when I was kind of drowning in my workload. And I still have those moments now, and I kind of embrace it because I just think this is just part of it. Do you know what I mean? And I've met a lot of people who are entrepreneurs or who have like their own gym chains or whatever they have. And they all say there's a point in your life when you lose balance. And the important thing is that you get over that and like you get past that. But you have to have those periods when you work so hard that it kind of feels a little bit crazy. And I think people are scared to admit that they did that or that they do that. Mm. And I'm not, because I feel like that's what I did and that's what I do. And I do now... I have got better at listening to myself and realizing when I'm getting a little bit too overwhelmed, because when I first started living in London and was working every hour of the day to try and make enough money to cover rent and stuff, I was so stressed. I was having these like mini meltdowns, I call them. And I'd just cry and be overwhelmed and oh my God, it was crazy. I really hardly slept either as well. It was a really crazy time. But now, like, I don't have those meltdowns anymore. But if I start having a mini meltdown, then I know, Sana, what are you doing? Why are you working so hard? Take a step back. Do you need to work this hard? Okay, if you do need to, maybe do it for a couple of weeks, then step back, have a couple of days off. Like, I'm very much better now at, like, listening to myself and knowing when I need to take a step back rather than just plowing on and then melting down. So I am so much better now. And also, I did a really good thing about a month ago where I hired an assistant.
That is a good plan.
That's really great.
It gets to the point where you just need to be able to defer some of that stuff.
Yeah. She only works for me, like, one day a week, but what she does has actually changed my life.
Amazing. So the fact that you even highlighted the importance of being honest and saying, yeah, I did work really hard. It's not all about zen and balance, because sometimes I am off kilter.
Yeah.
You're also really good at, I think, highlighting imperfection and flaws, but not in a, you know, not saying they're bad, but just saying, look, it's important that social media isn't just this pretty sizzle reel of life.
And yeah,
your captions are very honest. What kind of role has social media had, and like, how has your perception of social media changed in the few years that you've been in this business?
I feel like it's really important as a creator on social media to not portray a perfect life. And like, I admit that I've got a pretty great life. I love my life. And what I share is an accurate reflection of my life. But I also try and share the down days. I don't always share the negative parts of my relationship, because that's not my choice. Mm-hmm. That's his choice as well. But negative parts of like my personal life, I want to share that. I want to share when I'm like overwhelmed, I'm stressed, I haven't slept enough, or like I've had an argument with somebody, or a business element has failed, or like I want to share that, because I feel like that's so important. And also like physically, like people don't believe me when I say it, but I have cellulite, and I showed it on my Instagram, and everybody's like, oh my God, you do? I'm like, yeah, I know. I've been telling you for years. But then when I actually show it, people are like, oh wow, that's cool. What? So, so yeah, I try and like show people that no matter, like my photos were all taken from good angles, you know? So if you see it from a bad angle, like from behind, you might see a bit of cellulite, and that's cool. So I'm trying to show that as well, because I think it's really important to not like support this whole social media element of being like perfect and looking perfect and being airbrushed. Like I spoke to somebody recently who follows people on social media. She's not a blogger or anything, but she says that like she can't post a photo now without photoshopping herself because of the pressures of social media. And I'm like, damn mate, I don't photoshop any of my photos, but I know that a lot of people do, and people that you don't think would do it. And you don't even realise that they've done it. Nobody knows that they've done it. And I'm like, fuck, like, people don't know how edited people's lives are. Like, damn. I don't know. And like, also the fact that I know all my close friends are bloggers, and they've all got their own shit going on, but nobody online knows about it.
So I always find that really disconcerting when I'm friends with someone, and I know, like, having had a conversation with them the night before, that, like, they're having a really shit time, but then the next day they post the picture. Woo! And it's like... And I think I find that the most disconcerting part of social media is like there's the real self and your real life, and then there's like the
social
projected
media self.
Part. Exactly. And then there's the part that it's like, are you trying to convince yourself that this is great as well, or convince everyone else?
It's hard though as an influencer, because if you're having a really bad time in your life, you don't want to just be portraying negativity, because people don't find that empowering.
Exactly.
So like, I had a really negative time like 3 months ago, and I showed like a few down days, but I wasn't going to say every day is shit, because that people don't find that a nice thing to watch.
To escape, don't they?
You like have to find that balance. And like, there's a lot of bloggers who don't share their personal lives and don't share their low times, and I get it as well, because it's very vulnerable to show that, and you're opening yourself up to criticism when you're already feeling weak and vulnerable. So I'm like, I understand if you don't want to share it. But I also think if you have the strength to share it, please do, because it empowers other people to feel like they're not alone. So yeah, I think it's really, really, really important to not just show a perfect life. And I'm not perfect at showing all my imperfections, but I show as many as I feel comfortable with. So
And do you feel nervous ever posting something, or does it just feel like a natural extension of yourself now?
I don't ever really feel that nervous, and sometimes I forget that what I'm posting is going out to a lot of people, and then people send me a lot of messages and I'm like, oh yeah,
I forgot about that audience of people.
But yeah, like, it feels so relaxed for me now to do Instagram stories and to share parts of my life that I don't really get nervous about it. The only thing I ever get nervous about is when I talk about the fact that I'm plant-based, because people get like really aggro about that. People love it when I talk about plastic, people hate it when I talk about meat. Even though it's an equally, if not more important environmental issue, people just don't like to have that part element of their life confronted or to be questioned about it.
So interesting.
I find it absolutely fascinating because they're both of equal environmental importance, but people don't want to hear about one of the issues and they do want to hear about the other one. So that's one thing that I get nervous about talking about because I know that I'm going to get backlash. And also the fact that I'm not a perfect vegan. And like, I got criticism this morning on one of my posts because I was wearing a leather backpack, which I've had for like 5 years. And people are like, I thought you were vegan and you're carrying a leather backpack. I'm like, I've always said that I'm 95% plant-based.
Yeah, like you're held to these standards. That I'm like impossibly perfect. Really.
People think that I'm like this really super eco-vegan queen when I'm like not.
But you aspire to do your best every day.
Oh my god, always trying to do my best, but like sometimes I'm just not perfect, and like people expect me to be, and they expect me to not own anything leather and not buy anything in plastic and not do this. I'm like, guys, I am a human. Yeah. And like, sometimes I'm just not that motivated. Like, sometimes I just want that convenient snack which is wrapped in tin foil, and I know it's really bad, but I just want to eat it. Do you know what I mean?
Consciously consuming. Always.
At least then like, I know. I'm like, okay, I won't do that for a few more days. But like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. But people expect me to be like this zero waste vegan queen person who never gets anything wrong, and I'm like, no, I'm not.
Do you feel like the pressure from your kind of followers and your audience to like constantly?
Yeah. And there's things like, I'm not 100% vegan with my diet, but on my YouTube videos I always show my days and I'm 100% vegan, and people message me saying like, but you say that you're not 100% vegan but you never show non-vegan food. And I'm like, because I know that if I did,
everybody
would attack me. And I'm like, I know that I eat it, but I don't want to show you guys because I know you're going to attack me. And I only eat it in certain situations. Like, if it's usually a food waste situation. If it's going to get wasted, then I'll eat it to stop it being wasted because I'm really anti-food waste. But never meat, obviously. But like dairy and eggs, if something's going to go to waste, I'll try and consume it before it goes to waste. But I know that if I showed that, shit would hit the fan. So it's really hard because I want to show people and be like, look, I am flexible, and like, I do sometimes let things slide, but then I know that there's this like angry vegan party over here who would then come at me with a hammer. So it's, yeah, there's definitely pressure, you could say that.
And have you learned to kind of let those negative comments roll off your back a bit more and not influence your day-to-day life?
Yeah, and I think I'm very good at blocking people. It's a skill of mine. So if somebody says something which I'm just like, oh, I just block, or I ignore, or I just delete. And like, I think some people would be annoyed at that and be like, well, surely you can take criticism. I'm like, if it's valid criticism or a valid question, I will respond. But if it's just like pointless negativity, I'm like, delete. Do you know what I mean? Like, what's the point? I don't want to give you time of day. I don't want to give you attention.
Exactly. You don't want to give your energy away on that.
No.
So another thing that I think you're really good at talking about is the idea of kind of the magic happening outside the comfort zone. And it feels like you've constantly been pushing yourself out there, or you've been living outside of it probably since you graduated, basically.
Yeah.
And it's a really uncomfortable place to be, and often it's terrifying and you can have no idea what you're doing. But you kind of talked about how you've been put in positions where, like, speaking in front of hundreds of people, going on live TV,
yeah,
they're all terrifying prospects to you. But again, from the outside looking in, it can look very seamless and easy. How do you conquer those situations, or conquer your fears in those situations?
Act confident and nobody will question it. That is literally fake it till you make it. That is my motto in life. Like, if my agent messages me and says, do you want to do this thing? And I'm like, oh, no.
Like, when your gut is like,
I'm scared. Then I'm like, then I catch myself and I'm like, you should probably do that then. So then I make myself do it. And then when I go into a situation where I know that I'm anxious, I just kind of tell myself, act confident, nobody will question it. And if you go, for example, like when I've done filming, like I did some filming a few weeks ago with Fern Cotton, and it was cool, like she was lovely, and I wasn't nervous at all until I actually got on set. And then I was like, right, if I just act confident now, nobody will question it. And then I was like, cool, I'm just going to pretend like I do this all the time. And then I did, and it was fine. So,
and now you've like, done it once. That's it. Like, yeah. You could probably do it again.
Yeah, and like, I used to, oh my God, used to hate public speaking, like, with a passion. In my fourth year, we had a module which was marked, one element of it with the public speaking, and I just didn't do that module. Because
you're with a guest now, though.
No, because I was the only person on my course who missed it because I hated public speaking that much. I physically couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. And now I have like done talks in front of 200 people or more. So,
and is that like, just the literally every time you just kind of gear yourself up to like,
yeah,
I'm not scared of this. Like, even if I am, no one else will know.
Exactly. And like sometimes if my voice shakes, I'm like, it's cool. It's cool. Like, it'll pass.
It's the worst when you're holding paper and paper's
yeah,
shaking.
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. No. See, I'm fine with my hands shaking, but my voice will sometimes tremble. Then I have to, like, cough it out.
I'm fine.
Yeah, that's how it's supposed to be. But, yeah, like, I do still get nervous, but I know that the more and more and more I do that I find uncomfortable, the more comfortable it'll become. Like, if I think about that, I could never do public speaking a couple of years ago. I started doing small public speaking things, and now I can speak in front of 200 people. I'm like, seeing how far I've come with that motivates me to do more things that scare me. So,
and what still terrifies you? Like, is there anything that you just avoided altogether?
When I do talks, I tend to do it on a panel, or I tend to do it like in a situation which is quite informal, mm-hmm. where it's like a Q&A or something. If I had to do like a formal TED talk, I wouldn't want to do that. Where you have to like learn everything off by
yeah.
heart,
and then it's also about the performance. And
yeah,
the
like
delivery.
That would I'd literally poo my pants. So,
but now you probably should put it on your list of things.
I know. I like now I've quite a few of my friends have done them as well. So I'm like, oh, maybe I should just do a TED talk. Like, I know it's going to be horrible, but I should just do it because I know it'll make me grow.
Yeah.
So,
and when you look back on it, does it just feel like when you look at it, you're like, oh my God, I can't actually believe that was me that did that.
Yeah. I remember when I was getting my book deal. And I had to go and do this talk in front of like Waterstones, W.H. Smith. It was like 250 people at this dinner party. And I had to like stand up and talk about my book. And that was one of the most formal things I've ever done, public speaking wise. And I was like, oh my God, I'm fine. I just did that. Like, it's cool. So like, you're like, oh my God, wow. Like, I sat down after doing the talk and I was like, oh my God, I just did that. Ah!
Does it feel like because it's so in tune, you're doing what is so in tune with who you are as a person, and
yeah.
it feels right that you are kind of following your passions and you're in your element. So it's like you'll never ever have that. I mean, obviously everyone has imposter syndrome, but it's not like you're ever pretending to be something you're not. Like, I think that's a big
yeah.
part of this.
Yeah, and like usually what I'm talking about and doing is something that comes so naturally to me
exactly.
that like even if I have a brain fart, I can pull something out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
because
you're not like having to pretend and
yeah, like it's just me.
Front. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Although I do get imposter syndrome, but that's a different element.
it's so like reassuring again that you know everyone gets imposter syndrome, but no one blooming talks about it.
Oh my God, I like, for example, I'm signed to Adidas. This happened recently. I was like, I was signed to them for a year, and then they were going to renew, and I was like, oh my God, they're not going to renew me, they're not going to want to work with me, like, this is it, it's been a great year, but thanks Adidas, like, see you never. And then I'm in Sri Lanka and I get a phone call for my agent, she says, they want to re-sign you for 2 years. And I was like, what? Like, me? Why? I was like, 2 years? Oh my God. And I ran down the plane. I was on an airplane, just about to take off. And I ran down the plane to my friend Steph and was like, they want to re-sign me. Oh my God, I can't believe it. Like, but in my head, I was thinking they're going to drop me. Because in my head, I'm like, why would they ever want to work with me?
That
like,
is so like it's like the kind of thing that you would never speak to a friend the way that you're talking to
yeah,
yourself.
Yeah.
So it's like, why convince yourself that you're not worthy when...
No.
Like, you just created a story in your head that was just totally
yeah, because I'm like, it's Adidas, they're a global brand, they can work with anybody. Why do they want to work with me? I'm sure they're going to drop me.
But do those little moments kind of just confirm to you that you're actually doing a really good job and you should give yourself more credit?
I still doubt the Adidas thing, like, every day. I'm like, why me? So, yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, yeah, you're doing all right. And then sometimes I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like, why are these people wanting to talk to you? Why do people care? I don't know. It's like, I have serious imposter syndrome, probably like 50% of the time.
And how do you deal with the kind of wobbles and those feelings of kind of inferiority?
I just think the thing which I know for certain, whether I am worthy of what I'm doing or not, is that I've worked really hard.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you've worked hard for this. Like, I can say that to myself comfortably because I am a very hard worker. So like, if something cool happens and I'm like, why has that happened to me? I'm like, it's because you worked hard. Like, it's not because of anything else, it's because you worked hard. So like that's what I tell myself when I start to like have a bit of a wobble.
So we talked about this earlier, mm-hmm. and I feel like it's a really important thing, and it's also something that people are promoting a lot on social media, is this idea of time management, like stress management, having balance, and obviously mm-hmm. I know you talk a lot about balance. What are the things that you do now in your day-to-day life to kind of try and keep as balanced as you possibly can when you, and switching off from kind of the online world?
So the main thing which I did a couple of months ago was I turned off all push notifications on my phone, except phone calls.
That's
so literally has changed my life. When your job is your phone and you turn off all notifications, it will actually change your life. It feels like I have control over my phone now, not my phone has control over me. Like, I used to come out of a meeting and then I would look at my phone and I'd be like, oh, shit, there's like 60 notifications there and I've got to go through them. Whereas now I come out of a meeting, look at my phone, there's nothing on there. I'm like, cool. And then when I get home, I can set aside an hour or two to go through everything.
Yeah, it's not playing on your mind.
Exactly, because I don't know what's there.
Yeah.
So, it's best to not know what's going on my phone. But yeah, like, that has literally changed my life. And I cannot recommend it enough. If your phone is a huge part of your job, turn off notifications, leave your phone calls on. If somebody really wants to, they'll call you. Otherwise, like, they're not that desperate. So leave it. That's definitely been a game changer for me. And also, like, I'm not 100%, but I had this problem where I would work really late into the evening. But now, like, if I finish my work at 6 p.m, I will try and stop myself there. I used to be like, if I finish my to-do list at 6 p.m, I'd look into my next day's to-do list and start and keep working. Because I was like, well, just keep going.
Yeah,
like, yeah. Like, just keep going until you can't do any more. But now I'm like, you finished today's to-do list, Anna. Stop. Go make some dinner, relax. Like, I have to literally talk to myself and be like, stop working, close your laptop, go to the kitchen, like, turn off your notifications, do this, like, don't look at your emails. And because my emails are, I don't know, I just want to reply to them, even at 9 p.m. And I'm like, stop it, don't look at them, don't reply, don't do it, nah.
Because you're having to create the boundaries. It's not like you're going into an office at 9, leaving at 5, and it's very distinct. Like, it's really up to you, isn't it?
Yeah, and like, my boyfriend inspires me because he has a normal job. And he, when he leaves work, literally leaves everything in the office. And he comes home and he does no work.
I love those people.
And I'm like, wow, look at your work-life balance. So nice. I would like that. But like, he inspires me. So then in the evening and he's there like properly relaxing, I'm like, I want to do that. I want to relax. So I need to turn my laptop off now. So yeah, he's definitely motivated me to try and turn off a bit more in the evening.
I think the hard thing is as well is that you're doing something that is such a reflection of what you enjoy and love.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you kind of could be doing all the time and you probably wouldn't get sick of it. Whereas a lot of people are going into their 9 to 5, not quite what they want to be doing, but they just do it and then they leave and then they've got their own time and they're two very distinct kind of identities. Whereas you don't really have that, I guess.
And I love my job. And like, I could easily do it all day, every day, 7 days a week and never take a day off and not feel bad about it because I love it. Like, it's actually unhealthy in a way because I like love it so much. I'm like, I don't ever want to stop, so I literally have to force myself to not work, and a lot of it doesn't feel like work. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I have to,
because it's like, I guess there's so much variety there that it's not like you're going on same commute every day. And
no,
and like, the weird thing is you've never probably had that, have you?
Oh my god, I've never had that. I've never had that life, so now I don't ever want it.
No. I mean, I don't think it, I feel like it's the kind of whole like multi-hyphenate thing is where things are moving, and remote working is becoming more popular. So yeah, I think it's amazing that you've never had to like catch the same train every day and sit in a suit at an office
desk. God, no. And like, I feel never like now I've had a taste of this life, this like self-employed life. I'm like, I don't think I could ever go back to working for somebody else.
But that's motivation enough to just moving.
Yeah, and like, also when you work for yourself and it's your own business on the line and your own success on the line and your own income on the line, you never want to stop working, because it's ultimately the more you work, the more you earn, the more you grow, the more you succeed. So you're always like, well, I could just keep working. Do you know what
I mean? What advice would you give to someone who is in the like aforementioned category of probably doing a 9 to 5 but really would love to try and make a go of, I don't know, like their passions or have more of this kind of flexible working life? How
would
you do it?
The side hustle.
Yeah, side hustle, exactly.
Well, what I did personally was I did full-time personal training and then I built the blog alongside it. And then it was a very, very slow, gradual process of going from full-time personal training to full-time blogging and whatever else I do. So I was doing 7 days a week personal training and doing the blogging like in my hours. So when you personal train, you like work early mornings and late nights, and the middle of the day is free. So I would use the middle of the day to like work on blog stuff. And then I went down to like 6 days a week, 5 days a week, 4 days a week, 3 days a week, 2 days a week, 1 day a week.
It's really incremental.
Yeah, like literally over the course of 3 years. And I just am doing my last shift at the gym next week.
Oh my God, so, that's such a moment, isn't it?
I know. I'm like, oh my God, this is crazy. So yeah, like I'm going full-time, full-time blogger as of next week.
That shows you that it's not, like I think this is a theme that comes up quite a lot in this podcast, is that often it just looks like, oh, you went from this full-time job and snap your fingers and now you're doing this full-time. Mm. But it's really, you're phasing it out and it's constantly shifting and changing, I guess.
Yeah, and like if I needed any more income, if things were getting a bit rough on the whole blogging side, I could always go back and do like a day of personal training a week.
Yeah,
just to give me security.
Again, it's like, you know, you have all these different plates spinning and you could just pick one up again if you really need to. And that's the beauty of what you're doing.
Yeah, that's what I appreciate about it, the flexibility for sure.
The last thing I feel like I couldn't not talk to you about, your new shift in interest in sustainability. Because it feels like you talk about this generational thing, and it's really important to think about the planet and the generations that are coming after us and what we can do to help make this change.
Mm-hmm.
What are maybe three things that you would recommend listeners to think about implementing into their day-to-day routine to minimise their waste or plastic use?
Great question. So if you guys don't know, like I was a fitness blogger and then I'm a fitness blogger. I'd say my content is like 75% fitness blog, fitness lifestyle, health, mindset. And then like 20 to 25% is like sustainability now. And that was something which literally came out of the blue, in the sense like what actually triggered it for me was I started with diet because I watched Cowspiracy. And then
that hit me hard.
Yeah, like that hits you. So I watched that. Then I read a book called Eating Animals. The day that I closed that book, I went vegetarian. You need to read it if you haven't. It's like amazing. And then it was a journey from there to going to be basically plant-based. I am pretty much plant-based now. And then I work with Adidas, and Adidas make trainers out of plastic called the Parley trainers. And they brought me to New York, actually, just over a year ago. And I went to a presentation by the founder of Parley and the founder of Sea Shepherd, which is a charity I'm now an ambassador for. And it blew my mind about the whole plastic situation. And I was like, I thought I was doing enough by just doing my diet. But now I've learned about plastic, I'm like, holy shit, nobody talks about this. This needs to be talked about. And this was before Blue Planet too. So this is before anybody else was talking about it. And I was like, oh my God, oh, we're drowning in plastic. So I just thought, I need to talk about this, but nobody else cared because nobody had watched Blue Planet 2. And
it's
like
amazing the power that Blue Planet had in making people care more.
Blue Planet 2 has literally had the Blue Planet 2 effect. Like it has shifted perceptions in the UK and across the world.
But were ahead of that curve.
Yeah, and like nobody else knew about it at this point. Well, obviously people knew, but the vast majority of the population had zero awareness about plastic. And I was like, how am I going to make this cool? How am I going to make people want to do it? I want sustainability. My goal, ultimately, is to make sustainability cool. I don't want it to be like, oh, she's like an eco-warrior weirdo. I want it to be taboo if you have a plastic straw. I want it to be cool if you have a reusable straw. Like, right now it's a little bit taboo if you're eco-friendly, and it's more cool to like be wasteful and a consumer. And I want to flip that. I want to like make people feel cool for being sustainable. You own your reusable bottle and you go to work. When somebody asks you why you have it, you're like, well, this is why, and this is why, and you should totally get one. Why don't you get one from here? I want it to like be a cool thing that people want to do. Like, that's my goal, because it's never been a cool thing for me. Like, back in the day, I thought it was weird to be eco-friendly. Now it's like my life. So anyway, that's a very long backstory.
Good that you told that.
But yeah, like now I feel like when I talk about sustainability, it's like so well received. I think because people come to me for smoothies and squats, when I then talk about sustainability and the straws, like people are like, oh, I didn't realise you were going to talk about that. And it actually feels like more engaging, because they don't come to me for that. They come to me to learn about fitness.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, actually, there's this other thing that I really care about and you should totally learn about it because it's really interesting. And then people watch it and they're like, oh yeah, like I never realised that was a thing. It's crazy. I get messages like every day from people saying they've changed their lifestyle, they've changed this, they've changed that.
That must be so great to read though.
Yeah, I did an Instagram story last night about sustainable eating and like three swaps every person can make, which I can tell you in a minute.
Yes, please.
And I must have got about 300 messages or more people saying, I've gone vegetarian because of you, I've reduced my meat because of you, I've like reduced my plastic, I've got a reusable water bottle, I've done this, wow. I've done that. And I'm like, oh my God, like, this is amazing.
Yeah. It's not like you can just create a revolution out of nothing. It has to start from the bottom up, and you're doing what you can and using your platform to do that.
And like, people say to me that, there's this woman who messaged me last night, she works at dental surgery, and she's like, well, I can't change all the single-use plastic in the actual surgery, but like our water filter thing, which everybody fills their water from, she's like, we've got rid of the plastic cups, everybody's using mugs. And like, if you think about, in one dental practice, they're stopping using like thousands of plastic cups a year from that single swap. I'm like,
that's incredible.
It's like literally amazing. So people are doing things, and that excites me. So that's what I'm aiming for. I want to like lead the way and get other people to get involved and to want to be a part of the change.
And is that through obviously using your presence on social media and being an ambassador of charities? Do you have any other plans in the works to do this?
I think I'm doing lots of beach cleans this summer with different brands. I've done beach cleans like all over the world to try and raise awareness, and they're horrifying and amazing at the same time, very empowering. But I think for me, the most power that I can have is with my voice. Like, my friend is called Will, he works at Greenpeace, he's the head of oceans there, and he's like, the one thing that you can do is talk about it, because people listen, people do things. Like, If I personally, Zanna van Dijk, give up using plastic straws, that's great. But if I can then influence 10,000 other people to give up plastic straws, that's even better. So it's all about me just talking about it and empowering people to make changes. So that's the goal. I don't have any specific thing. Like, I don't want to change a policy. I would love for that to happen. But like, that's not the specific goal right now. It's just to make people aware and to like empower them to do things and not feel like they're not going to make a difference. Because if every single person did something, then positive change happens. And on that note, let me tell you some things you can do. So for plastic, the main things you can get reusable are a water bottle. Water bottle, cutlery. I'm in New York right now, guys. Take your own cutlery, because they never have normal cutlery. It's always plastic, like everywhere.
It's the land of plastic.
Yeah, America, so generally. Taking my own cutlery with me has been a game changer. So yeah, water bottle, cutlery, coffee cup for me, because I love a coffee. And maybe Tupperware, tote bag, straw. Invest in reusables. Like, that's the main thing.
And just keep them in your bag all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other thing is food packaging. Like, that's the main area that people slip up on with plastic. And that's the main area that most of us consume our plastic.
Yeah.
So it's like looking at ways that you can reduce that. Like, can you get things which aren't packaged, like your fruit and veg? If you go to the store and you see loose avocados and avocados in a pack, can you choose the loose avocados? It's literally as easy as that. Just making those choices, which are a little bit more conscious on a daily basis, like, that's what matters. When it comes to food, the three main things that you can do to support the planet is, number one, eat the minimum amount of animal products which you personally can eat. I personally choose to not eat any, /many, animal products. The more plant-based you can go, the better. Eating, basically, animal agriculture has a massive negative impact on the planet. Extensive research has shown this. And eating more plants has a positive impact on the planet, especially legumes, because they put nitrates back into the soil and our soil is very depleted. So if you can eat a lot of legumes, then you are killing the game. And the next thing you can do is try and reduce food waste. So that's just trying to make sure that you don't overpurchase food. You just buy what you need, and anything you don't use before it goes off, you try and freeze it so you can use it later. Food waste is a huge issue. Every piece of food which we waste every day could feed all the starving people in the world. So please don't do food waste. It's also very inefficient. For example, if you throw away one egg, you are throwing away 55 gallons of water. So it's crazy. There's like 1,700 gallons of water go into making a steak. You don't eat your full steak,
it's the agriculture that's involved.
Yeah.
Is that in What the Health?
Yeah,
about it as well.
It's crazy, the inefficiency of food production. So if you are wasting food, you're definitely wasting resources. So it's really important to try to not waste food, guys. Just buy what you need, eat as much as you can from what you buy. And the last one is to just look at where your food is sourced. If you can source things locally, great. I personally, as somebody who lives in London, aim to source things from Europe. Because if you just ate British produce, you'd just be eating potatoes and onions all year round. So I do let myself have peppers from Spain. So yeah, try and source things as locally as you possibly can, rather than getting your asparagus from Peru. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's the three main things you can do.
Great. And I think it's like we were talking about, is that don't hold yourself to impossible standards. Just do what you can do slowly and learn and talk about it.
Sometimes I just want some mango. And mango does not come from Europe. So I just like, I just let that slide sometimes because I just really want some mango.
Yeah.
So,
and it's like just forgiving yourself because you know that you're being conscious. And, and that is the main thing.
Every choice is a conscious choice. And I said this on my Instagram yesterday, like every single consumer choice which we make supports a certain production practice or farming practice or production system. Everything we ever buy, I know it sounds scary, supports a particular system or process. So buy consciously. Don't just buy things for the sake of buying them. Buy them in a conscious manner, knowing where it's come from and what you're supporting. I think that's really important.
Yeah, it's really easy to just shove a card in and put your PIN number in and not really even think about the webs.
Yeah, like if people forget that like every strawberry you eat has been handpicked by somebody.
Yeah,
like your cotton t-shirt, somebody picked that cotton, and cotton picking is not a good job.
No,
like it's very dangerous at times. So
we're promoting it by spending.
Yeah,
in that
so the more minimal you can live your life, the less things you can purchase, the better. Like I hardly shop because I don't want to be fueling all of these industries 24/7. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Anyway, I went off on a random
thank you
there.
For all of that. I think it's great inspiration. And again, you're doing what you want to do, which is spread the word.
Thanks.
So, so the last part is really just about growing up, and we're back to where we started. Mm-hmm. And I just want to ask you, what does growing up mean to you now? Like, as you're looking ahead at the rest of your 20s, like, what does it mean?
I think for me, growing up is keeping working for myself is a really important part for me of growing up. Enjoying what I'm doing. Enjoying what I do on a daily basis. And my friend Max said to me the other day, he said, what are 10 things you want to do every day? Like, what are 10 things you want to include in your life every day? I'm like, movement, eating well, being outside, doing a job that I love, like making a list of the things that you want to do every day and making sure that happens every day. For me, that's what's important as I grow up, like enjoying every day, having a little bit of everything that I love in every day, and yeah, loving life.
Great. And what do you want to do or be when you grow up?
I want to be...
Have you not been asked that since you were 5?
No, never. I want to be me. I want to just keep running my own brands. Be my own boss. That's what I want to be. What do I want to be when I grow up? I want to be my own boss. I love being my own boss.
And just stay open. Because that's what's got you this far.
Yeah, exactly. And like, enjoy the journey.
Yeah.
Take all the opportunities that I can.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks
for having
me.
It was so lovely talking to you.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks.